Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned into Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your host, Jay and Trey. And good evening. Welcome in. You've got indeed the Kings of Non Sequitur. This is the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you for a hot sports hour live on a Sunday night, July the 18th, 2021. I'm Dre. He's Jay. And what's usually going on in the middle of July in sports in America? Baseball, the All-Star festivities just took place. We got the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks. Basketball, the NBA Finals usually are done by now, but of course with the pandemic, we had everything get moved around, so they're still going. Pretty damn good finals, as a matter of fact, even though you got two teams that no one could give a damn about either way. And hey, it's baseball season, shooting season, Olympic season, you got all sorts of things going on. Jay, what's going on?
I'm doing good. Not a lot, not too much going on since the last time we talked. I mean, other than just the keeping things up to date from the things that we talked about on the last show and then progressing into this show. And hang on. I don't know if you can hear myself patting myself on the back for calling that Bucks Suns final. but I did that. So
yep.
Yay me for my, 10 minutes of not sounding like a complete idiot or bigger idiot when I talk about basketball. So yay, I actually have paid to watch. It's amazing what you can take away from things when you actually watch the games.
It is. And, with the stars not being there, the bigger stars, it made it more difficult to figure out, who's going to come through it. Because, you have no idea who's going to step up, who's going to take the mantle and take charge. And to me, the finals themselves, I don't know if you'll agree, this is kind of playing out the way I would expect. When you got two teams and neither one of them really know quite what they're doing, you got one team that started out the first two games at home, took advantage of that atmosphere, and they got hot. And then the next two games were in a different place, and that team decided, okay, we're going to rebound and get our bearings, and we're going to get hot. And then game five just took place last night, and it was a taffy pull for both of them. And, it came down to a great defensive play, and that's usually how those things turn out. It's, neither one of the teams have an advantage in finals experience, so you just kind of wait and see who's going to make the big play, when it matters, when it comes down to the end. And last night it was the Bucks.
Yeah, and when you have these sort of unproven teams both in the finals together, so we don't even have the storyline of the veteran team versus the kind of the upstart team where one of the teams doesn't know what to expect. This is both of them. Neither team knows what they're doing and knows how to win in these spots, and they're sort of finding their way. And I got to give full credit to the Bucks the last two games for making the big defensive plays down the stretch to kind of take these games away. Because, without the big block from Giannis in game four and then the big strip of Booker by Holiday and then the alley-oop to Giannis, without those two plays, we could be finals over.
Right. It could have been Suns in four.
It could have been Suns in five,
right? Yeah, right.
But instead, it's looking like they're coming back here to Milwaukee, and Phoenix has got to go on the road and win or go home game six. And Bucks are in a position. You always want to be in that position of winning game five. It doesn't really matter, what kind of a series it is. If you win game five, usually things are going to go pretty well for you. You got a shot. So I think it's 72% of the game five winners. That stat's been thrown around a lot.
It's basically a best of three, and you don't want to go out losing the first game of a best of three because you have no margin for error at that point. And that's
exactly
what the Suns find themselves now.
Yeah, and as just from watching the games, I'm getting the sense as the series has progressed that the more I watch it, when Milwaukee is playing at their best, they're better than Phoenix at their best. That's just the way it looks. It just seems like there's way too many players who can contribute offensively for the Bucks, where the Suns just seem to just stand around and watch Devin Booker.
Right, and if Booker and Chris Paul are both kind of stagnant and
right.
seeming like the moment is kind of outsizing them a little bit. I don't want to say that they're freezing up or whatever, but it does seem like they, after those first two games, they kind of thought, okay, we got this. We know what we're doing. We got it down. We know what to do. And
yeah.
then the Bucks came back, and it's like, now what? We don't have
yeah,
a counter
move.
It's
easy to front run, right? It's easy to have all the swagger. You're at home. You're beating them. They beat them pretty soundly in game one. And held on and won game two. And then all of a sudden, the Bucks go back home and punch back, and it's like they didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. That inexperience.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I've appreciated watching Devin Booker through these finals or through the whole playoff run and watching that game last night in the finals, he's literally an offensive foul on every possession. he's Michael Irvin on offense. He just literally runs up to dudes and just straight up pushes them out of the way.
Pushes off every play.
Full arm extension, two, three times on one play. I like that there was one replay where one of the commentators was talking about how he, created separation as they're doing the the replay, and you literally just watch Booker push the other dude out of frame.
Is that not creating separation? Come on.
He definitely, yes, technically, true. He created separation. I've always, in the NBA, that you can't get that full arm extension.
You're not supposed to.
And he was doing it two or three times on every possession, but he needed to. If he wasn't doing that, they had him pretty well locked down. And it was the two big turnovers that he had where Jrue Holiday had the two big steals. First time he drains a three in his face, and then the second time it's the alley-oop that basically ends the game. Where that sort of shoving his way around didn't work out for him. And it was, I thought those two defensive plays were the plays of the game to me.
Yeah. The defense wins championships. That's all I was thinking, especially last night in that steal. That's all I was going through my mind is it's a cliche. They say it all the time in every sport, but man, that's what it came down to. That's exactly how the Bucks won game five. And that's how they're going to win the series if they wind up winning it.
Yeah, and you expect on that last play, because it's only a three-point game, I believe, at that point, that you knew the ball was going to go to Booker. So, and Booker's just, he's dribbling down, and he's probably expecting, okay, I'm going to get down to the free throw line, I'm going to shove somebody, and then I'll just take a jumper, right, or I'll do something, or I'll get out. But he gets in there. I don't think he was expecting Giannis to be waiting for him with the other dude. And then all of a sudden he turns around and there's Holiday ripping the ball right out from his hands. And I was into it. I was really into that game. And then the dunk, I didn't even realize he got fouled.
Oh, if someone's in the air, you can bet Chris Paul is underneath him trying to push him somewhere, because that's what he does.
Yeah. And then once you actually see the replay and you saw that he basically just ran straight at his midsection, tried to push him off the ball. I'm like, is that flagrant?
It's dirty. It's definitely dirty.
It is dirty. But then give Giannis the credit for having the strength to have another human being, another grown male, trying to push you out of the way midair and still have the strength to throw that thing down.
He's inhuman.
And then get his own rebound.
Inhuman.
And then he grabs his own rebound on the free throw miss and just does
the
smart thing
back.
And just taps it back. I tell you what. That's a genius play right there, because if he catches that, he's got four Suns.
You're going to hack him again.
Yeah. I mean, he'd have karate chops. He'd be stabbed. I mean, they would have done everything to him right there if he would have just jumped up and grabbed that thing. And, he just tipped it back, and they get it to Middleton bricks the first free throw, and you're thinking, oh, boy.
No.
So, then you're just like, oh, it's all set up. He misses the second one. Suns grab the rebound, go down, hit a three, overtime, but it didn't happen. It's been an entertaining series that nobody's watching.
Nobody, no.
Outside of Phoenix and Wisconsin, I don't know, and I haven't seen the ratings. I haven't heard a lot about these finals ratings. I expected them to be poor to begin with, but it's actually been a fun series.
They're missing some damn good basketball, I'll say that. The one thing I did hear maybe after the first two or three games was up from last year with the, you know, the bubble.
Oh, the bubble, yeah.
But definitely okay. Down compared to a couple years
ago. I was
going to
say,
like
up from last year kind of feels like tallest midget territory.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Like, you know, you're not up to your normal standard, but hey, you beat the year that everybody had COVID and they played a sham finals in a bubble. So
good job, guys. Congratulations. We've had somebody that was immediately jumped on the phone line as soon as the show started, and they've held on for 10 minutes. So they obviously have something very important they want to say. And we're glad that they joined us. So we're going to let them speak now. Area code 973, please state your name, where you're from, and what is on your mind tonight.
Thank you, gentlemen. This is Luke Klein from New Jersey. I saw
Welcome
you, in. Yeah. Actually, I think I tried to get on the show before, but time didn't really allow me. So no, it's okay. It's not your fault. I get busy around here. So anyway, I didn't really think that it was going to go this far between the Bucks and the Suns. I really thought that at first that the Suns were going to sweep them. I thought maybe they just had too many weapons against the Bucks. But then the Greek Freak and Middleton just stepped up, and I think it's becoming quite a series now. It didn't look that way in the first two games, but Milwaukee has stepped up their game, and now they got a chance to take their first title in 50 years on Tuesday. Figure. Now, here's a question for you that this was asked on another show earlier. If Giannis does win, would you consider him a superstar in the league?
I personally
think he's already a superstar in the league.
Already, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
there's no doubt in my
MVP,
mind about
that. That's 2-time MVP. That's good enough for me.
And does it on both ends, offense and defense.
Yeah. I mean, basically, he's got one flaw in his game, and that's his free throw shooting. But
yes.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, so
no,
did Jack.
So did Jack.
Oh, no, that was a horrible free throw shooter. Horrible.
Yeah, Shaq was lucky. I mean, Shaq would salivate if he had Giannis's 60% free throw shooting percentage.
Yeah, that's like 10 times higher than him, or 10% higher.
Yeah, he was in the 40s pretty
At
regular.
Least.
So yeah, Giannis is definitely an all-star and an all-pro.
Yeah.
He's one of the best in the league. He might be the most unguardable player in the league because,
yeah,
like, no matter who you have on your side, if you tell them to look at Giannis and go stick him, go D him up, who's going to take that challenge and be like, okay, I'll do that. Who can do it?
I think Giannis's problem, and this is why these shows have to bring this thing up, Giannis's problem is a geographical problem. Giannis's problem isn't that he's a superstar.
Yes.
Giannis's problem isn't that he plays for Milwaukee. He doesn't play for the Knicks, or he doesn't play for the Celtics, because the Lakers. I think Giannis the people who tend to ask these questions on these shows tend to be your coastal guys, anyways.
Right.
So that's where it comes from. You know, there's that tendency that if you're not in New York or in Los Angeles and you're not drawing the big media market, that they forget about.
To the former Lou Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who did play for the Bucks on that championship team.
Yeah, well, 15, before my lifetime.
And made
a
championship out of Milwaukee.
That's right.
I appreciate that history, though. That's definitely the last time that it happened in Milwaukee was
Oscar Robertson
and Lou Alcindor.
Big O, yep. And I was still in diapers.
Well, that's
you know, and that was back in
enough.
The time when a lot of the people watching these games would only see those players come finals time. You didn't have the media like you have it now. So then obviously
– Oh, no. The media just goes overboard.
Yeah, I like the talking point, but no, they could lose the next two games, and I think Giannis is still a superstar.
Just the fact that he took them to the finals, go through the entire conference and make the NBA finals, especially with the pressure on him having one MVP, and then the knee injury on top of all of that, which is probably the most amazing thing about what he's doing in these finals is when he hurt that knee, it was thought that was going to be the end of the season for him.
Yeah.
And not only is he still playing, he's excelling.
And I wasn't I wasn't too down on the prospect of the Bucks being able to come back in this series because, you know, it's easy to forget, even though it's 2 weeks ago, that the Bucks had to win that game six and game seven. They had to find a way to do that without Giannis. So they do have other guys.
Yeah. Personally, I thought if you didn't have Giannis, I thought you were a dead duck.
They would not win this series. They wouldn't win this series without Giannis. I think they caught lightning in a bottle beating Brooklyn those last two games, but they clearly need him. I mean, those two plays.
If it wasn't for that one little mistake that Harden made, we would have been there.
Well, there's the Nets fan coming out.
You know, if Scott Norwood doesn't miss that field goal, the Bills are a Super Bowl champion. I mean, it's easy to say, by about a half a yard. It's all too easy to, you know, all these games are games of small measurements, right? Inches, and somebody has a bad game in the wrong spot or comes up small. Obviously, if you're the Nets going into Game 6 and Game 7 and you don't close out that series against the Milwaukee team without the MVP best player on the team, you got nothing.
If only Harden's foot was not on that line, which I didn't think it was on the line, but the refs call it that.
We talked about this on the last show, didn't we?
On Durant,
that ref was like, he was on the spot. There was no hesitation. There was no going to the replay. Yeah, if he was a size, you know, 16 instead of a size 17 or whatever he is, they might be in the finals.
Yeah.
So
that was a hell of a series.
Down,
that was a good series too that nobody watched.
Mm-hmm. Who takes it down, Lou? You think Paul and Booker have a comeback in them, or you think the Bucks take it all?
Well, depending on who you ask, because the head coach today said, we gotta do all we can to force a game for the game seven. Monty Williams said that, and I believe his spirit. But at the same time, the Bucks have been much better at home. They have the door open. You know, they can close it up on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
But on the other hand, I've seen 3-2 leads been blown before.
Mm.
So it's kind of like a toss up.
Okay, well. Fair enough. Well, I appreciate your candor and your honesty. You sound like a longtime fan and some good stuff that you had there, and good to have you on the show.
I've done basketball since before I could talk.
You sound like it.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I've been following the Knicks since, 2021 now. I would say since 74, 75.
That's before us. We didn't start till the 80s.
That's right. We grew up. We were lucky enough to grow up in Chicago in the 80s with the Bulls. That you get lucky when you get to watch that.
Lucky.
Grow up in that. Well, it was an environment. You know, it was an experience growing up with that team.
Right. Well, I remember when the Nets first came to New Jersey. Well, I should say back to Jersey from Long Island in 1976. So I've been following that since then. I still remember the dumb theme song they had on a local TV station here when the Nets came to Jersey.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm not doing the theme song. Uh-uh. No way. I'm not going to make it.
Thank you.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it on national radio. Uh-uh. You can't
probably
put it off the air.
That's all right. We're not asking for that.
Thank God.
But no. No, I think the finals have been very good basketball. I think the fact that the star, there's not so much star factor, you know, without LeBron and Steph Curry and all that. I think there's a lot of people that are missing the finals. Like we were talking about, the ratings are very low. But if you're watching it, you're watching great team basketball. You're
the
watching guys that
you
have to depend
on
each other.
Well, the thing is that, people really pay attention only because the way you look at it, it all depends on how large the fan base is, too, because not for nothing, but the Suns and the the Bucks, don't really have a big fan base, even despite the presence of the Greek Freak. You know, that's where you get, the Lakers, the Knicks, which is, the Knicks, it'd be good for the NBA. It'd be good for the NBA. And, but of course, the Boston Celtics were not too thrilled about that.
Right.
They made some comments about that, like, oh, really now? Hmm.
Yeah, I guess you don't see too many people wearing Bucks jerseys outside of Wisconsin. I don't see many Bucks jerseys down by you there. Do they, Dre?
No, I definitely don't see Bucks or Suns
no.
down here. I am.
No, that's that's why we were pretty quick to call this a regional finals, and that's what it is.
For the Packers, maybe, but for the Bucks, no.
Oh, yeah, Packers play everywhere. You'll see Packers stuff everywhere. Packers, Cowboys, you see.
What
those.
About the what about your Brewers?
I'm a Cubs fan, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't like the Brewers, and it kills
He's
me
in
that
Wisconsin.
My son does. It just like stabs me. Well, I grew up in Chicago, so I'm a Cubs fan. So,
fair enough. I guess you were thrilled in 2016, weren't you?
Yes. I cried.
So was I.
I cried. A grown man, I was crying.
Yeah, I think I went to bed that night. Gosh.
No, I didn't do it until the next morning. I actually woke up, and when I realized it was real, that was when it happened. It was weird. It didn't happen that night.
Well, what was weird was,
nothing felt real that night. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to bed and wake up, and this was all a bad dream, or a good dream, and then I was actually going to wake up in the morning, and it turns out they blew Game 7. And no, they really won.
Well, what was weird was that, you know, it started to rain at the end of regulation, and it was after midnight. You're like, oh, how long is this going to go?
Yeah.
This could be till 1, 2 in the morning. Oh, we're going to be up all night. And I was on another podcast at the time. Well, actually, I'm still with the guys. We do it on weekends now. But we were covering the game because it was, you know, the final game of the World Series. And, you know, people, no matter who you were, you were looking forward to this game because this was history that you were going to see. So we stayed on until the game was over. And when that final out was made, I'm like, oh, my God, it's a miracle. The Cubs have won 150 million years. It's all over.
It was an amazing night.
Oh, boy. It was. I was like, finally, it ended.
All right, Lou, I'm going to put you on mute. Thanks for calling in, and that was some good stuff. Good to hear from you.
All right. If you have time on Saturdays, I host a podcast myself called The Enhanced Sports Show. We're on Saturdays. In your time, it's 4 to 6. In my time, it's 5 to 7. If you have time, call this following number, 512-543-4662. Once again, 512-543-4662. We'll cover the wrap-up of the finals, opening ceremony of the Olympics. We got some baseball. We got some hockey news to talk about. So it should be a fairly interesting and entertaining show. So if you got time, please call in. 4 o'clock your time, 5 o'clock mine. On that note, good night.
Good night. That's from Lou in Jersey, a little Jersey magic we had there.
We'll have to put a for a good time call and then the number.
And of course, with our history in our 8 years of doing this podcast, anytime you turn the phone line over to an unknown caller and they kind of keep going for a while, you kind of get a little tense. And
you're starting to wait to hear about like Mike Mitchell stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some draft party stories. That was
an old hit.
That was on point throughout. But, yeah, that is Giannis a superstar player? Boy, that sounds like one of your – that sounds like a bi-coastal question, right? That sounds like your running theme of the day on all the, you know, bad take. Yeah, on Bad Take or First in Pizza or whatever they call it these days or any of these shows. That sounds like that running theme that they would have. Oh, if Giannis wins the title, is he a superstar? What if the answer's already yes? I wonder if that was one of the answers. And if there's anybody out there who said no, then you know that was just to be, you know, contrary, because you're not watching these games.
Like, if you're watching the game, you know the answer, because you can see it. It's right there in front of your face. If you're not watching the games and you just go to the stat sheet, 30
it's
through
yes
five
or
games,
still yes.
through five games of the finals, this is Giannis's stat line.
Yeah.
32 points a game, 13 rebounds, and 5.6 assists. It's a really, really small list of guys that are going to be able to compile that line if he goes on and finishes this thing off on Tuesday and certainly would win the finals MVP award. It would not just be a good performance. It wouldn't just be a good performance for someone with a bum knee. It would be like a great finals performance. This is one of the great finals performances that you're watching with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And, yeah, nobody in their right mind is wondering if he's a star, because that's just craziness.
Yeah, and on the other side, you get to watch Devin Booker for the first time in NBA history put up back-to-back 40s and lose both games in the finals.
And lose. Because when it comes down to it, like I said, I'm watching that last play with Jrue Holiday. I'm like, oh, there it is, defensive play to swing the entire game. Because I really did think Booker was going to make that shot. They're going to get the ball back and go ahead and win the whole game. The momentum had turned in that game to where – because the Bucks had a huge lead at one point, and the Suns had whittled that back down.
They were up 14, about with 8 minutes left to go, and then their shot selection at that, they just got – they were taking a lot of contested shots. It was basically just Middleton trying to just take over and fire up shots, and they went through about a five-minute stretch where their offense just looked completely, you know, out of whack. But, again – the sphincters get tight when these things get late. This is the finals, right? And it's easy, you know, especially if you have a team like you have in the Suns, and all of a sudden they hit a few three balls, and that those leads evaporate quick.
Mm-hmm. And the Suns got all the way back to within shouting distance, and it really did feel like they were going to turn all the way around and take that game. And
yeah, they had all the momentum at the end of that game. And then for Milwaukee – you know, that you can't stress enough how big time that final play was.
Mm-hmm. On the defensive end, and also on the alley-oop to Giannis. Giannis with the bad knee, I thought when he went up and as awkwardly as he did and got pushed by the cheap shot artist Chris Paul, I just knew when he came back down his knee was going to explode again, and he came down just fine. And I'm like, oh damn, this dude is RoboCop. Yeah. We're watching
and RoboCop. has time to mean mug the camera.
I guess he's not that hurt after all. I guess he's better off than we thought. That he's amazing. He is unbelievable. And you're watching a great right now. If you have to ask that question, you got a screw loose, because you're watching a great player right now. No doubt.
This is probably the most sustained exposure that you've had to this Bucks team.
Right. Most of the people watching probably haven't seen them like ever, like for a full game.
Exactly. So. You know, I do feel a little bit, a little bit more in tune with that team, because I do get to watch them more regularly, because, like I said, if they're playing on any type of a weekend game, they're always on at the job. So, or any of the 6 o'clock starts, I'm always catching at least the first half of the game. So I've seen a lot of that team, you know, and so I think there's going to be that tendency for people to say that it's just, Giannis and Middleton, but you know, I just have that sense that the Bucks are a deeper team than Phoenix. Because outside of like Chris Paul and Booker, everyone else on that roster has just gone to ghost town.
Yeah, DeAndre Ayton's kind of looking around, wondering what he's supposed to do, and the rest of their role players are all sort of dropping off to the side.
Their backups,
really...
was that Saric? Was that backup center of theirs not being there doesn't really help them either.
Right. Yeah, there's
you do not want Frank the Tank playing meaningful minutes in an NBA Finals, and that's what we're getting.
Yeah, that's like watching someone step on a roach. Is just like not even fair. No, it's two teams with not a whole lot of experience, sort of almost figuring their way out as they go along these finals, because that's a different team already. The Suns, they're already a different team now than they were in the first two games, because that's all their confidence seemed to be gone. Devin Booker specifically, Chris Paul had been just playing lights out, crazy basketball to get them to the finals, and now he's sort of gone to sleep a little bit. You can see him trying. He's he's really, every cheap shot you can find, he's taking it, and he's really trying on the offensive end as well. But it's just not there. Calling to the reserve and trying to go deep into the well, and he just can't find it right now. So that's why I got to think that this is it. And on Tuesday, there's going to be Bucks in four instead of Suns in four. It's going to be Bucks in four after they lose the first two. Because I just don't see Booker finding the confidence all of a sudden in game six on the road. That's just, I can't imagine that he's going to do it in that scenario.
That's going to be a hostile
yeah.
crowd.
Yeah, I can't see it happening. So.
I agree with you on that. I've got that feeling, just kind of the gut feeling that it's over on Tuesday. It feels like almost a repeat of game five to me. It feels like the kind of game where Phoenix probably just comes out and gives them everything, you know, for a quarter, maybe a half. And then the Bucks just take over third quarter and it's over. And you'll reach that point sometimes in the game when you just know a finals is over, right?
Right.
Where you just watch the other team, they're playing golf. You know, they're already thinking about the flight home and what they're going to be doing with their off. I have a feeling we could have a feeling like that midway through the fourth quarter of this next game.
Hashtag full of quit. Mm.
the Bucks have put some whoopings on some people in this playoff run. They've got it in them to all of a sudden just go out and blow somebody off, out of the gym by 40.
Sure.
They did it. They had it happen to them almost every series, and they've done it to somebody in almost every series. And they haven't had. They did have that. Was it game three where they whooped them? I think they beat them by 20.
Yeah, the first game back in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that was 120-100. That one they kind of put a whooping on them, but we haven't really seen just a good old fashioned ass kicking yet. I think there's one coming.
Hmm. We'll all find out Tuesday. Those of us that are watching, I know a lot of people aren't. But...
I'm off work. I'll be home. My wife and I actually were out yesterday. We were, kids were having a sleepover, the grandparents. So we had, oh my God, what are we going to do? So we had to go to a birthday party. Then we was like, oh, we got plenty of time. We went to the casino, and then I was following the score updates at the casino. I'm like, oh my God, they're down 16 in the first quarter. By the time got home, they were winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a crazy first half. Yeah, so I was hanging in Milwaukee. That's the hot half hour of NBA talk that I don't know anyone who's listened to the show ever thought they would get. But staying in Milwaukee, I wanted you to recap and think back to a baseball game that you took the cute factors to that turned into a football game.
Yeah, that was a wild. It was one of the wildest base, and I've been to a lot of wild baseball games. That was wild to watch a team go out and trying to avoid a sweep, goes out and puts up seven in the top of the first inning, and I'm like, man, I don't know how we look great. And all the Brewers just look terrible. I mean, the Willie Adames shortstop just literally overruns a ground ball. He then hits a grand slam later on in the same game. It's like, oh, okay. And you could just see, because it was Arrieta, who I'm surprised isn't DFA'd. Goes, he's injured. I'm doing the air quotes right now.
Uh-huh.
After that he goes out the next start after that start and then gives up another inning in two thirds and gives up seven runs. And just that he didn't have it and just completely let the Brewers come all the way back. So that, all the momentum that they took in the first inning, they gave right back in the first bottom of the first and bottom of the second. And I think that was 7-6 when he left. And then, yeah, in the fourth inning, they just unloaded on them, and I think they put up seven or eight runs on them. And, yeah, it was that was all she wrote. I had one happy kid and one kid that was crying.
Oh.
My daughter was so sad. The cute factor was so sad because she wanted to go see a Cubs win that she's just sitting there with her head down and in tears. And I was just like, Trin, this is what it's like to be a Cubs fan.
I was about to say, welcome to being a Cubs.
This is you have now gotten the full experience. I think you've been spoiled being able to grow up with basically a team that has been playing meaningful baseball for almost her whole life.
Right.
And yeah, I don't think she was expecting to go and see them just get shellacked the way they did. And just look, they talk about hashtag full of quit. They just, you could see by the third inning. They were done.
But they were leading 7-0. What do you mean
they
were done?
That's why they were done, because you get up 7-0, that's it, game over. And they just couldn't stop letting the other team score runs, and their offensive output just they stopped. They stopped getting guys on base. They started swinging and everything. That game ran so long, we ended up having to leave at the end of the seventh inning. At the end of the seventh inning in a normal baseball game, no rain, no delays. It was all
at that point. It had been 7 hours, right?
It had been 3 hours and 20 minutes just to get through seven.
Yeah, this is, by the way, we never did set up exactly when this was. This is on a Wednesday afternoon.
It was a Wednesday afternoon. It was a 1:10 start.
Before the All-Star break.
Before the All-Star break. And it was 4:30 when we left the stadium. It was 4:30 because I was like, we have a three-hour drive home, right? Yeah, we got to eat dinner.
Right.
So I did take the kids to Portillo's for dinner.
Oh,
that'll make anyone stop crying. Portillo's in Wisconsin now. Have I told you that?
I believe you mentioned that, yes.
Yeah, they're in Madison, which is really convenient because that's right on the way home. So we took the jog over to Madison and right off the highway and went to Portillo's. So that was
that's the real reason you left. Let's be honest.
We also sit around and wait for
the end of this BS, man. We got Portillo's waiting for us. We're gonna get the hell out of here.
We left the house at 8:15, 8:20 in the morning. We got home at 9 that night. So that was a long day.
That was a full-ass day, huh?
Yeah, because Milwaukee isn't exactly, 10-minute drive from here. It's, three hours. So that was a long day, and I knew if we stayed through the end of the game, then we're going to be leaving the game. It's going to be 5 o'clock. It's going to be rush hour on top of trying to get out of the stadium. So, no, we did the right thing. So we got out of there. Nothing happened after we left. But yeah, my son, he's six. He doesn't quite get everything, but he knows math. He knows that 15 is way better than 7. He got to see a grand slam. He understood what was happening. He played baseball, so this guy's his first taste of playing the game, and so he understood what was happening. He knew what home runs were, the look on his face when they hit the grand slam, and he's just like. He wasn't cheering. He was just sitting there with his eyes wide open. Like, I just saw that. I was in a baseball game, and I just saw it. I think he was appreciating what he was seeing.
He was in awe, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you have to explain to them that most games don't go like this.
I had taken them to a game two years ago yesterday. I believe it came up on my wife's Facebook as the two-year anniversary. We took them to their first baseball game at Wrigley. And that was only like a 5-3 game. So I think they know that not every game is going to be, have a football score by the end.
Yeah, 7-0 lead for the Cubs.
In the first.
And
yeah.
In the first inning. And when it was all said and done, it was – so they didn't score at all again?
They didn't score again, 15-7.
Damn, 15 unanswered.
Yeah,
by the Brewers.
That was I'm texting you throughout the game. I'm like, it reminded me a lot of those late 90s, early 2000s Brewers-Cubs games that were always wild because they were both terrible, right?
Yeah.
And those games were just – those were all 12-10 games, it felt like.
Was Harry still around for those or did he –
was Harry still there? They might have been there for a few of them.
Another grand slam by Jeff Cirillo. That's going way back back machine there.
Yeah, we'll never. The Brant Brown game was in Milwaukee.
Oh no!
Yeah, that was in Milwaukee with the shooter. So yeah, the Cubs and Brewers have a history of having some wild games.
Boy, is Brant Brown in the Hall of Infamy? Speaking of,
I don't know because
that thing.
Yeah, that was funny. That was '98. That was when the Cubs were the first ever wild card team. That was
believe
the
me, I remember.
Year. Yeah,
yes.
you have a very distinct memory. Of that
definitely.
'98 Cubs team making the playoff run there. But that last week and a half of the season, the Cubs did everything they could not to get to the playoffs.
Right.
Right. They had that game with Brant Brown. They had the game where Terry Mulholland, I believe it was down in Atlanta, had just a dribbler back to the mound that he threw all the way down the right field line.
I remember that. I was I was at an OTB with Dave, the movie expert, and our old friend Rory, and we were watching it on the TV screen above us. We saw the dribbler, and we're like, oh, that's the end of the inning. That's a sigh of relief. And then the ball goes 80 feet over the first baseman's head. It's like,
that thing rolled and rolled and rolled. And then they lost that last game and all. Yeah. And then Nathan Perez takes Rob Nen yard. So.
100-mile-an-hour Rob Nen.
So I know Nafy's in. That was my first guy I put in. But I don't think Grant Brown is in yet, because that's really – you want to talk about a really contained name, right? There's not a lot of people, I think. It wasn't just the Grant Brown play. It was Ron Santo almost dying in the radio booth.
That was my – oh, no! That comes from me hearing. What did you? Were you hearing?
I heard it on
the radio
version. I got that live on radio, so I heard that the first. I remember. I can tell you exactly. This is one of those like 9/11 moments. I can tell you exactly where I was when that happened. I was driving for. I think I was driving. I was 98. So where I was on the Eisenhower. I was on the Eisenhower. I don't remember where I was going, but I was in just bumper-to-bumper traffic out by, like, you know, by, like, the Cumberland exit, you know, out there on the Eisenhower. Yeah. And, you know, it's, like, right by the Strangler out there, you know, and it was just – and it's rush hour because I think that was a day game. So that was late afternoon. So I'm just bumper-to-bumper. It's hot. You know, I'm just sitting there in traffic and like, all right, you know, Rod Beck's falling apart. But, hey, all right, lazy fly ball. Out to left. Oh, man. And I had to hear that. You want to talk about, like, you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You just take it. You just have to take it, you know?
Just sit there and take it.
Yeah. And that was a hard one. So hearing all the pain in Santo, because, you know, nobody bled the Cubs more than Ron Santo.
Yeah.
And
that's a rare occasion where we both heard the radio call, because I usually don't, you know, wouldn't be hearing a Cubs radio call. I'd be watching the game on TV, except, like I said, it was a late afternoon game. So I was coming home from work, so I was listening on a Walkman. Not a Bartman Walkman, but my own Walkman. So that's why I was able to. So we both have the live reaction of Santo on that, and that's why it's seared into our minds so much, because he sounded like he walked in on somebody stabbing his daughter to death. Like the sound that he made, oh no, it was just the worst.
Yeah, you just get Pat Hughes. He dropped the ball.
With the perfect juxtaposition next to Santo sounding like someone is killing his wife, and Yeah, that's probably going to go in if you don't put it in next year, because I got the baseball this year. You got football.
I will put it in next year if I don't put it in. If either one of us put that in, we have to at least do the diligence and have the audio.
If it's out there, we'll find it.
Oh,
it's
out
there somewhere.
I think it's out there. I think that, because that's a legendary radio call.
Somebody has to have uploaded that to YouTube or something, Yeah, I would think.
What somebody needs to do is go back and pull Santo's reaction and start like, you know, dropping it in over like events in history. You know,
because it really was an older humanity type of reaction.
Yeah, well, Rod Santo watches the Zapruder film.
And Pat Hughes off to the side, back and to the left.
Rod, that was a very Hindenburg type thing. There you go with the Hindenburg reference. You know, Rod Santo. What if Rod Santo had been doing the call in New Jersey?
Oh, the humanity! Trying to break into Paul Bearer there. Oh, yes!
Oh, man.
What
that would have been better than if Joey Styles did it.
Oh, my God! They're dead!
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, we're off the rails. We're off the rails.
Oh,
no! Oh, son of a bitch. That was Joey Styles, too.
Yeah.
For people who don't know.
when he was really trying to put forth the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
He wanted to let you know he's really worried now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we are sort of previewing or talking about our next shows coming up, which are going to be our Hall of Infamy inductions.
Yeah, that's sort of that. That's the official kickoff to football season for us, right? We get through the baseball and football Hall of Infamies, and then boom, we're in football season.
Yeah, training camp starts, you know, right as right before the NFL Hall of Fame game,
yeah.
And we do the NFL Hall of Infamy induction the same weekend as the Hall of Fame game. And
there's
baseball
only 3
Hall
weeks
of, Fame,
of preseason this year.
That's right. I totally forgot that there's the extra game, the 17th game now.
Yeah.
Where they take a week of the preseason away and then tag it on to the regular season, which, as you've already expressed your concern, means that it's basically just going to be an extra regular season version of preseason football. But
I fear for the quality of football that we are going to see in, quote-unquote, week one. I fear for it. It's going to be bad.
I totally understand your point, but I guess what I would say is, how much worse can it get? It's been terrible for years now, that first week of
worse.
Football.
So whatever we've worse. Been seeing, worse.
Because as the years have gone on, we're so old, we're, you know, along with Lou in Jersey there,
yeah.
We remember back when starting players actually played in the preseason and actually really did knock off the rust. But now there's much
yeah.
more of a concern
well,
of you don't want someone to get hurt. So most of these guys, most of the starters play almost no actual preseason football, even though they
right.
were four.
You used to have sort of this unwritten rule that in week one, they'd play a series. In week two, they'd play a quarter. Week three, they'd play a half. I mean, the starters I'm talking about. In week four, they wouldn't play at all.
And that was about how it used to go.
But you would have seen in those 4 weeks, all of the key players would have played basically a game's worth of time. Right? Spread out over the 4 games. Now, there were some guys who'd play a lot more, like your, you know,
yeah.
your defensive guys, some of your subs. They would be, they, you know, because people got to play. They still had to have the games. So I don't know if by having just the 3 games, is that going to mean that we'll see a little bit more of the regulars? Does, like, week three sort of stay like week three used to be, and maybe everybody just plays that half? Or if week three I'm not excited by these prospects of what we're going to have for football the first 2 weeks. We last few years have basically been dropping the medical drama, you know, where all of a sudden our show is turning into Quincy MD the first 2 weeks of the regular season, or House. Because the list is getting longer and longer every time we go through a week one or week two of you going through all the list of guys who are out. Oh, MASH. There you go. It's a little quiet, so I can barely hear it.
Oh. Yeah, I'll try not to overrun you there.
Yeah.
But no, what I would guess, and those are valid questions of how it's going to look, my guess is that most of the really big stars are going to say that it's got to be the way that it's been the last 10, 15, 20 years, which is you can't let me touch the field at all in the last preseason game before week one, or else you're going to risk
right.
me getting hurt. And so I think it's going to be I think some guys are going to play in that week three that wouldn't necessarily play, but I think most of the stars are going to be like, oh no, I still can't touch the field before week one, cause I got to be completely ready for week one. And what that's resulted in is we've seen a lot less quality continuity in week one, because guys are much more concerned about being rested up and not getting hurt before
yeah.
week one, then they are concerned about getting ready to actually play quality football in week one. And you can argue, you know, which one is more important or which one is better. But I don't think it's arguable that the quality of football in week one is definitely much worse than it was when we were younger. Because, like you said, it used to be, you know, they got their rust in, they got their work in the actual games in the preseason before. And that's just not happening now. They refuse to play more than, like, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 series in a game no matter what. These guys just do not want to do that because they're so afraid of getting hurt. And I don't blame them either. I know it's sounding like I'm criticizing, but I'm not. There's so much money on the line. There's so much more valuable than they used to be. We're talking about guys who are making, you know, $20, $25 million, $30 million now in a year. How much was Jim McMahon making at his peak in the NFL? You know, a mil? So,
not,
obviously.
Not this kind of – yeah, you're not Pat Mahomes getting a half a bill, you know, for your contract.
Or any of Russ, Brady, all of them that you know, $35, $40 million a year. I understand that they don't want to play, you know, the last game before the season starts. They want to make sure they're fresh and they're ready. But that's at sacrificing the quality of the actual game that they're playing, because they just none of them seem ready to play week one. They all of them seem like they're at least a beat off, and some of them are really off. So. That's what it is, though. That's where you are now, and I don't think that's going to change for most of the stars.
Yeah, I think that extra, you know, with that 17th game, you know, there's no drama. They'll tell you there's drama in week one. There's no drama in week one. You can't pull anything out of these week one results anymore. It's become as meaningless as week 17 for a lot of teams.
Except for the overreaction theater. They make a whole
they'll make a big
hour
deal
or 2 hours.
Postgame
show out of those results
in
week one, and they act like that's just going
to
determine what's happening for the whole rest of the season.
Yeah, if a guy
what's
catches
wrong
three touchdowns
the New
in the
England
first
Patriots?
Game, he's going to have 51 touchdown catches this year.
Because
now that's 17, you know, into the 16 games. So, yeah, 51, you know, we just automatically go, and everybody will run to the waiver wire in their fantasy league to catch that random third-string tight end who caught two touchdown passes who will not catch another one for the whole season.
Got to have them. Yeah, it's predictable and it's funny, but that's how it works every year. Yeah, they make full game shows.
I think teams are even going to treat it as a preseason game almost. If I'm like your team, if I'm the Bears, I'm starting Andy Dalton week one.
Unfortunately, I think that's exactly what they plan to do.
And they'll tell you why they need to, because if you're treating it like preseason, that means your offensive line probably doesn't know where to be. And you're not going to, you know, and if you're going to get somebody destroyed in week one, I think you'd much rather have to be Andy Dalton.
Better him than Mr. Fields.
Yes. So I have a feeling a lot of teams might treat that as a, you know, hey, we got that extra game now. So, you know, anytime you have more games, the results get a little bit more diluted. I think you'll see. I don't know. I think it's all going to come down to the different coaching styles, and maybe some teams are going to go out and they're going to try all out. And, you know, they just, hey, we got to be 1-0, you know, one game at a time.
Right.
But I think it's going to be some hard-to-watch football.
Yeah, it's been harder and harder every year. And yeah, now I don't think it's going to be too much of that is going to change. Have you heard about all the Olympic drama and stuff that's been going on? I know we don't talk about the Olympics at all.
I heard a guy, was it Nigeria or Uganda or something, is trying to defect right now. Did you see that?
That part I actually missed.
It was in the news today that one of the, I think it's from a mid-Central African nation. It was like Uganda or Nigeria. I don't know what sport he was in, but basically just disappeared from the Olympic campus a few days ago, and now he just resurfaced saying he ain't going back home.
Okay, I got the first part of that. I do remember that somebody had come up missing, but I did not know the resolution of that. So that's what it was, that he's trying to defect it. What does he think, he's Cuban, trying to come play baseball?
We got
baseball?
A whole Upper Red October thing going on here at the Olympics right now. We
share
in
the history.
God,
we've known each other too long.
Way too long, yes.
We actually did it at the same time, but because there's a delay on the podcast, it sounds like you got it first, but anyway.
He's doing that thing. He's I ain't going home. He ain't sending me back.
I have been so focused on all the COVID drama.
I'm turning Japanese, playing that song right now.
How many people do you think even remember that? Because, you know, us being of a certain age, of course we remember that song, but I don't think too many people
remember that
song
because it was sort of the official, unofficial theme song of Samurai Sunday on Channel 66.
Oh, Lord.
Now.
Wow.
So anyone first who gets the reference of the song, you get a point. If you get the reference of Samurai Sunday on Channel 66, you win the evening.
Yeah, that's real deep local Chicago, way back in the day history right there. But yeah, I was actually looking at all the COVID stuff that they basically haven't started the Olympics yet, and there are already athletes over there testing positive.
Be the Olympics of no fun, that is for sure.
With the whole bed thing on top of that, yeah. So
they're
between
eating,
COVID,
they have to eat by themselves. They're basically all like on lockdown at the Olympic Village. This doesn't sound fun.
And what they used to do to have fun is kind of hook up and
they can't do that.
Hump around with each other, and they can't do that because they're not supposed to be able to do that because of the beds.
Late teens and early 20-somethings, all kind of like in the prime of their lives, all just kind of hanging out together at the Olympics.
That's always happened. Got all these hot bodies together, and they just kind of all go off and hook up with each other. So the Olympic committee is trying to make that impossible because of the beds. I don't know if you had read about the actual beds.
No, I haven't. Are they tied to them?
In the name of keeping the athletes safe, quote unquote safe, instead of they made the beds out of cardboard.
Oh,
and what that's supposed to do is that you can gingerly lay on them by yourself and get the sleep that you need, but you can't have two people lay on these beds because they would fall apart, right? I saw where they're going, but my problem with that is that's not going to keep two people who really want to get busy from getting busy. You ain't never had sex on the floor, man?
We can't because of the cardboard bed.
You mean there's other ways to have sex besides on the bed? Who knew?
Maybe they're just hoping that these people haven't figured this out yet. It's Japan. Maybe things are a little different over there. I don't know.
It's the Olympic Committee. It's got nothing to do with Japan. That's the committee trying to...
Yeah, a little out of touch. It's supposed to be the same people who run the Oscars Academy.
I'm looking at these the pictures of the beds, and I'm like, okay, you take the sheets off the bed, you throw them on the floor, and you get...
Floor, yeah. But like, what they're going to find out, joke's on them, floor is cardboard, too, and there's alligators on the floor.
You can't have more than two people in the room because the floor just falls thin, and now you're in the alligator.
Well, I also heard something about the triathletes, the one who have to swim, is that triathlon or that they can't, that the water in Tokyo Bay is so dirty.
Oh,
I was like, well, just send them up to Fukushima.
Oh, jeez,
they'll have gills by the time they're done with the triathlon.
That solves everything.
Yeah.
Hey!
God. Yeah, this whole thing basically is a joke. We're making fun of it because it's a joke and it should be made fun of.
And I like that they're still calling it the 2020 Olympics.
Branding.
It's
all
the special
about the branding.
2021 edition of the 2020 Olympics. See, you got to get that part down, too. If it's on NBC, they should already have this part down.
I bet you they will. If you watch the games, they'll probably already have that taken care of. I'm not watching the games, so I wouldn't know.
I don't have a lot of interest. I'm more of a Winter Olympics guy. I've always have been. Maybe it's because I'm white and I live in the north where there's a lot of snow, but I've always liked the Winter Olympics more than the Summer Olympics.
Well, I'm just turned off by
the whole
concept,
yeah.
The fact that they shouldn't even be having the goddamn Olympics because it's still a breakout over there in Japan of COVID, and
so
still a lot of people that aren't getting vaccinated, and the whole thing is just going, it's going to turn into something really, really bad if it hasn't
already.
This gets
you back to the icky feeling that you talked about last year when sports were starting back up again. Like, this feels even less thought out than when we started sports up again.
Exactly. But you know what? The Japanese president has an election coming at the end of this year. So full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes. the Olympics are going to happen, whether they should or not. Because as we know, it's always all about the money and the power.
Yes.
Yeah, just very, very icky. We are done with our live hour, and we will continue on and have some more sports talk and whatever we decide to get to in our Kings of Non Sequitur edition of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. I was looking for the outro music, but I can't find it, so we're just going to move on to the after show.
Anyway. Well, I can't say that.
So somebody's listening, our new buddy Lou in Jersey, who's got his own show.
This is a person who's like tried multiple times to reach us.
Yeah,
anyways.
No, he did, but that rings a bell, doesn't it? Don't we remember somebody who called in a while ago that said kind of the same thing? I think it was the same guy. Because I feel like someone called in maybe a couple of years ago and said the same thing. Hey, I listen to you guys all the time or something like that. And it's like, really? Oh, okay.
No, well, you know, somebody does. We got $5.
We got our big time ad revenue that's coming.
We got our ad share revenue, man.
So somebody's listening and clicking on some ads. I didn't know anyone even got ads anymore. I thought everyone used pop-up blockers or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know how it works.
If you listen to the podcast version, though, it does drop an ad in. I know on
That's
iTunes,
true.
It drops an ad in right before the show.
Before and after, usually.
I never make it to the after part. I don't usually. I go back and I listen to our shows, but I usually don't listen to like all the way through. You know what I mean? Like the final part.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, I'm sitting there at work listening, so it's going to play out to the end because I'm busy working. So that's why
I've got a habit of listening to our shows while I'm driving to work or back home. You know, within a few days after the show, sometimes I go back. When we do our pick shows, I go back and listen just so I remember who I had.
Right.
So that's fun.
Yeah, I definitely listen to the pick shows before the games take place on Sunday because it kind of doesn't do much good to listen afterwards.
Actually, it does. Sometimes it can be very informative listening to our bad picks after we made them.
Oh, to
or
go back and go,
picks.
Oh, wow,
or our good
how
picks.
Confident I was.
Yeah, or go back and listen to, like, if you had that, like, stunning upset and you want to go back and listen to it, you know?
Right.
I still go back and listen to that show where I called the Red the football team. Drink. Where I called that one.
You caught yourself. You didn't go the whole way. You said half.
No, I didn't. Where I caught them to beat the Steelers and the reaction from Bryce in Brooklyn when I did that live on air.
Oh, he thought you
was like I had blasphemed.
Right. How could you?
Yeah.
How could you
but
say
then,
that?
You know what? I give him full credit. He called back up the next week, ate his humble pie.
At that point, I think he still thought there was a lot of good things. Because think about
We have not heard from him since that Cleveland game in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, think about
He's back in hibernation.
You're a Pittsburgh Steelers super fan, and you got your ass knocked out of the playoffs by the Cleveland Browns. You're going to be in hibernation
in
for a long time.
And what might be one of the worst quarters of football I've ever seen.
But yeah, back when Washington knocked off Pittsburgh, of course they were undefeated.
That was shocking. Yeah, that was because I called the shot, right?
Didn't just say they were going to struggle again and they weren't going to cover the spread. You said they're going to lose outright at home.
Yes.
To the Washington football team.
Washington, I believe a sub-500 team at the time.
And Bryce, being a Steelers super fan, is looking at his team, the last undefeated team in the league. He's got to be thinking great things are ahead, like a Super Bowl, at least an appearance in the Super Bowl. And, no, they couldn't even get out of the first round against the Cleveland Browns.
And, well, you and I had side-eyed the Steelers all year.
Yeah, if you watch the game and you're not a super fan, if you actually just watched objectively, you saw the issues
things.
And the problems that they were having.
Yes, there were some hints that this was not going to be the greatest team of all time.
Knocked out in the first round to the Browns. I didn't have that. I'm not gonna try to front and say that I saw that coming.
That was over and over quick. And yeah, no, I'm not into the Olympics this time around. I don't know who any of the people are. I didn't watch any of the qualifying stuff. I really just, it's not on my radar at all. And like you said, there's just like an icky factor to it.
So there was two South African soccer players that came over there that already tested positive. I was keeping up today with the American tennis player Coco Gauff tested positive. The Olympics haven't even started. Like the opening ceremony hasn't started. The games themselves haven't started being played. People are already coming up positive. Somebody, Olympic administrative people are coming up positive. This is just the beginning. This has all the makings of a complete global shit show. Yes.
This, like, they're all going to come back from their respective countries, and then it's going
to
be
and spread it to everyone
dead.
They know.
It's going to, zombie apocalypse is going to start at the 2020 Olympics in 2021.
This is how the pandemic movie on Netflix that's going to be made in 2 years, this is exactly how it's going to start, yes.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
There was a piece in the New York Times back in mid-June, so this isn't even...
it was a month ago.
This isn't any time recent that people were already wondering. The piece was called, "Why Are the Olympics Still Happening?" Like, everyone knew this was going to be a shit show.
I understand if you're one of these kids and this is it, your window is not long for this. So I understand that you've trained like most of your teenage or possibly young adult life for this moment, right? To go represent your country and go for the gold and all that. But I'm assuming a lot of these people, you got to have backup plans too, right? You know?
So some of them may not, but the point is, no one has a backup plan for catching COVID and having lifelong problems or even possibly dying. Like, there's definitely no backup plan for that. So whatever you're trying to figure out, if you're the Olympic weightlifter and this is all you've done and this is all you're ever going to do, and you have no idea what you would do after weightlifting is over, well, what are you going to do after you catch COVID and you might be one of these long-termers that has, you know, lifelong respiratory issues or things. I still feel like I've got issues from having COVID. Like, I still don't breathe exactly the same when I'm around smokers, for instance, or when I'm, you know, extra tired, extra blown up after a workout. I still feel like I'm a bit of a long-termer myself. I can only imagine how other people feel about it. That's something that I think it's crazy how people don't seem to want to consider that. Well, I might catch it, but it's not that big
a
deal.
The Kirk Cousins
so many people
angle.
don't get sick from it.
Right.
Yeah.
They got the "if I die, I die" mentality.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. There's I don't understand the mentality myself. But yeah, if you don't have any backup plan, I understand that might be, you know, a bit harrowing, but I'd still rather take the issue of having to figure out what to do if I can't shot put over the issue of what do I do if I catch COVID. I really don't think that it's anywhere near a big deal to figure out what you're going to do after your Olympic sport is over, because you got to have that day anyway. Eventually, you're going to have that day where
they've already said that, like, no fans, like, nobody can even be there cheering for these people. Like, all these sprinters are sprinting in empty stadiums, all these team sports, empty venues. It's depressing.
Now, juxtapose that against all the sports that are coming back in America and filling up their stadiums again.
Yeah.
WWE, baseball, basketball, all these people that, hey, pandemic's over.
Right.
Let's go. Let's party. Woohoo.
We had 12,000 people in Milwaukee watching the Bucks play at the stadium yesterday. And they're playing on a big screen TV. They did like 12. I don't know. I'm joking with one of my coworkers. I'm like, I didn't realize there were that many Bucks fans. But you look at the crowd. It's a lot of Johnny come latelys. You can tell. It's fair weather stuff.
And it's the team that's in the finals, so they're going
to
come
it's
out and hey,
it's what it is.
I'm very guilty of that for, like, when the Blackhawks were having their thing and winning Stanley Cups. I was out there cheering and rooting on the Blackhawks. Have I ever been to a game? Hell no.
Did you watch
I was
still?
Cheering.
I mean, are you really
hell
all
no.
in? Yeah, that's what I mean. So it was just, it's just the pride of your local team, right? Doing something.
It was a party. It was the hockey part.
That's all it was, yeah. It was like me going to my buddy's house to watch ECW pay-per-views, even though I don't like wrestling.
Oh,
you weren't there to watch the wrestling. You were there for the party. You were there for your friends and the beer and the food, right, and the Italian beef.
Yeah, you're there for the spectacle of it all. You're
right.
You're there to socialize.
And having
basically.
A laugh, you know, and having a good laugh, because I mean, as bad as, you know, I still talk fondly about going to watch those pay-per-views, because I will give the ECW credit. It was fun.
Hell yeah.
It was. It knew, and it didn't take itself too serious, right? It knew it was putting on a fun show.
It was having a good time. It was run by a guy who was basically got fired for being high all the time, and Paul Heyman, and said, you know what? Yeah. I'm just going to have some fun. Let's have some fun. So, yeah, I missed the hell out of ECW, because I don't even want to go into a long, because I will fill up the rest of the hour talking about ECW and its appeal and what made it good and what wrestling is missing as far as that element that ECW provided. But yeah, just I'll suffice it and agree with what you said. And it was fun. It was a party.
It was fun. Yeah. I mean, I still remember to this day some of those wrestlers and their shticks. And their sticks. Mm-hmm. They had some, you know, like Sandman, right?
Yes.
They could make a documentary about it called Shticks and Sticks.
Shticks and Sticks. I like it.
Yeah, say that one a few times.
No.
You'll definitely end up dropping a few letters and end up with shits. I almost guaranteed. I almost did.
And you sprang your tongue at the same time as well.
Sticks and sticks.
But yeah, that's what it's all about. Is just getting all these people out here to have fun and enjoy what's going on, and never mind the pandemic might still be spreading. And meanwhile, in Japan, the difference over there, why they're making people not even come out to the events, and why things are getting so much worse over there, is because, however reticent people might be in America to take the vaccine, it's much worse over there. Like, they really don't want to do it, and so therefore those variants and Delta variants and all that is just spreading worse and worse and worse in places like that. So it's very icky. The whole thing is icky. Like I said, it just started. The games haven't even started yet. We're having all this stuff. It's just like last year, watching sports in the middle of COVID, where you're just kind of like, I don't want to watch, because you can't watch and ignore what's going on. I mean, I guess you can. Some people have that ability. I guess, you know, I admire that, if they can really watch and ignore what's happening out there. But I can't. There's no way I could watch the Olympics and not think about what's going on over there in Japan and what's going on in the world. Like,
and
the empty arenas, watching the whatever the version of the Dream Team is this year, watching that in an empty arena. How could anyone enjoy that? There's no way I would do that.
And these Olympics, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I've always had a problem watching the Olympics when you know that it's all going to be on tape delay because they're playing on the other side of the world.
Right.
And if you really want to know what happened, now it's at your fingertips.
We are so old. We remember when it wasn't at your fingertips. We remember getting the newspapers to get the Olympic results in the night before.
Or you just watched the tape delay and you didn't know what the result was because there wasn't a ticker at the bottom of the screen telling you what the result was of the game that you're watching.
Yeah, that's way back in the day.
You know, if you change stations, you go to ESPN, they'd probably have the results because they're like the hell with NBC.
Right.
Whoever
care.
You know. They don't care. So you'll be like, oh, wait. Oh, I just changed channels and it just, oh, that tennis match I was watching is, oh, well.
Oh, we did win the gold in the vault.
Oops.
That I was about to get ready to watch at 8:00.
Oh, that was
Uh-oh.
Exciting. Until I found out who won. Yeah, sports
right.
is not something you want spoiled, because that's the ultimate reality show. So, you know, it's even hard to just, even if you go back and you watch highlights, you're just trying to either you missed it or you're a fan of the team and you were really excited for those highlights. But sports doesn't have the same appeal, like to go back and rewatch a game that you already know the outcome of.
Yeah. Yeah, only like hardcore super fans would want to go back and do that.
Or people who have all those World Series on tape.
Hey man, I still got them in storage. You know what I actually thought I was gonna do when I first started taping those finals and Super Bowls in, God, I think it was 1995. Digital did not exist yet. I didn't have any foresight to know that there was going to be something that came along that would make my videotapes pretty much obsolete.
You could watch anything you want anytime ever on your phone.
We weren't thinking
that way in 1995.
This is why Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and those guys are billionaires, because they foresaw that and I did not.
They did it.
When I was making those tapes, I actually thought that I would grow up and have a house with a man cave with all these walls of videotapes in my selection, and people would actually want to come over and say, "Hey, I remember that crazy 1995 NBA Finals with the Houston Rockets and the Orlando Magic. Hey, can we pop in that game too? Because it was really crazy. Yeah, let me go run and get that
I would be more interested to have a tape like that popped in just to go back and watch like the old commercials tonight on Eyewitness News after the game, and you go just whatever the atmosphere was, for things like that back then, that nostalgic flair, and that would have a lot of the Chicago nostalgia, a lot of those old local commercials.
But most of the commercials were national, but that's a perfect example of why we're lifelong best friends, because I don't know if there's anyone else in the world that would be interested in the commercials of those old NBA Finals and Super Bowls. But yes, I absolutely was taping the whole thing for that purpose. I did not stop the tape during the commercials and start it back up just to have the game action. I taped the whole thing because I wanted the entire flavor of the time. I loved going back and watching those 98 World Series and stuff with commercials for, CompuServe and AOL and stuff like that, and going back and remembering back when the internet was first starting and stuff like that, and 1-900 numbers. And yeah, I'm the nerd that gets off
Miss
on
Cleo.
That shit. I love that shit.
You get some Miss Cleo action going or something.
All sorts of stuff that you don't even remember. Businesses that are no longer existing. I love that shit. I do.
Oh, man. I don't know where I pulled that one from. That's just like I pulled that from the depths of my brain. Just all of a sudden I'm thinking 1-900 numbers. Oh, yeah, Miss Cleo.
Hey, call and get your future red, man.
Oh, man. Now I'm going to have to go on YouTube and see if they have those old commercials.
Oh, I know they have Miss Cleo. I know definitely that they have that. Yeah, it's a different world, man. Different world for sure. There's another Olympian that isn't going to be there, and it's not for COVID reasons. It's for getting busted for marijuana. And the problem with that is Sha'Carri Richardson is a sprinter. And I don't think taking marijuana is something that would help her sprint better. I think that's the opposite.
It usually slows you down, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the point of taking marijuana is for someone who wants to chill and be relaxed, not somebody who wants to go faster. So to ban her from the Olympics for taking marijuana seems to be really, really stupid and counterintuitive, especially considering the state of marijuana in America getting legalized, more and more
pretty
places.
Pretty much everywhere, yeah.
Just about everywhere. And
Wisconsin, and you would think this is a fairly, this is a, I guess, a blue state. It teeters.
I wouldn't call it a blue state.
It's not firmly, it's a purple state. It's definitely, it goes back and forth. It's not Minnesota or Illinois, or those states are true blue, and they've got the Colorado, and it's all legal now. I mean, we're almost halfway. I think we're halfway through now. All the states have done it. Oh, is Tennessee?
It's being discussed. I think it's going to be.
Yeah, it's being discussed everywhere. But
right. I don't know how close it is in Tennessee, because Tennessee is definitely
a red
state.
A little bit more of a red state, yeah.
Definitely. So
yeah, you're definitely surrounded by, I mean, well, yeah, you're pretty much bracketed in down there with Kentucky, Arkansas, Mississippi. Yeah, you're.
But it's funny it doesn't get much redder than in the South.
No.
That's true. But being here in Memphis, it's so funny that I moved from Chicago, from being in Chicago my whole life, which really could break off and be, you know, North Illinois and be the 51st.
It doesn't. It definitely is. I mean, we grew up there. We knew it was Chicago and downstate.
And then I moved down here to Memphis, and it's even worse in Tennessee. Tennessee could be broken up into three states because you got Memphis, which is its own state by itself. That could be, you know, West Tennessee, just all by itself. There's nothing about Memphis that goes into the rest of Tennessee. It's, you know, 50% black down here. It's just, you know, very different state in very different place in Memphis than anywhere else in Tennessee. Then you go where the university is in the middle of the state near Nashville.
Yeah.
And that's central Tennessee. That could be its own state because they're a little crazy. You get all the, you know, the country music and the yuppies and then everybody trying to be sort of the Hollywood of the South over there. And it's really crazy. And then, of course, I'm familiar with East Tennessee over there where the mountains are and all the crazy mountain people. And that's its own state as well by itself.
So you've been over there now, right? You went over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you go to Gatlinburg or?
Sevierville, which is right next to it.
Yeah, that's right where you get off. You went into the mountains and stuff, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. Thought we were gonna go over the mountains.
It's pretty country out there, though.
Oh my God, it's beautiful, but it's also like, first of all, I don't know how they drive on the side of those cliffs and mountains.
Yeah. I used to live in the mountains. I wonder that myself.
Like if you're going 40, and make a wrong curve or slip, it's over. Like, there's nothing there. There's hundreds of feet of nothing.
Yeah. Sometimes there's not even a guardrail there.
Right. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing there to stop you from just going, whee, and then flying right over the cliff.
That's true.
Like, how do they do that? And these people are going, no. They're
no,
not
all of them.
They're used to it. So they're just flying. They just flying, zipping around, and I'm like, really? People are crazy.
Yeah, I hadn't done any mountain driving in a while, and we were down in Branson, and that's in the Ozarks, right?
Yeah.
And it was different than anywhere. Like, I was used to the Mountain West, where you're in the mountains, but everything is, like, you have no sense of scale because everything is so wide open, right?
Ah.
So you're in the mountains, but you're not expecting, you know, death around every hill or every curve. That's how it was down in the Ozarks driving on some of these backcountry roads, because every hill was every hill and every turn was blind.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And so I mean, like, literally, you guys start to get up towards the top of these hills. If somebody's coming at you, you're dead.
It's over, right?
If there's a deer, you're hitting it.
That's how.
And everything there was so closed in, and it's all hairpin turns and blind hills. And yeah, that was some crazy driving down there in that back country down by Branson.
And Sevierville and out there in East Tennessee was no different.
It's similar. I've driven through the Smoky Mountains. That's the other thing that gets all the fog. So not only are you driving on those roads, you know, it seems like half the time it's foggy and you're driving on those roads.
And yet these people are right on your ass like you're going too slow. And I'm like, really? Are you kidding me?
You go right over the Smokies there on I-40, right where Tennessee cuts into North Carolina, and that's where they always have, like, the 80-car pileups every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's driving too fast, and then all of a sudden they just hit a pile of cars and then just keeps going, and it's the Blues Brothers.
Pretty much.
You can hear them. Sorry, I'm doing the song from the Blues Brothers. Now.
Yeah.
We all know it.
We Chicago. I should go get it and then put it on the soundboard.
For all those times that we talk about crazy car pileups.
Yeah, the driving on the side of the cliffs reminded me exactly the same thing that we were talking about when we were visiting the Grand Canyon, which is there's just bodies off the side all the time, right? There has to be because there's not guardrails.
Yeah, I mean, we were there. It was like there's nothing between you and death.
Michael PSAs used to say there ain't nothing between us but air and opportunity.
Like you're standing at the edge. Somebody trips as they're walking.
Bye.
Yeah. There you go. I'll tell you somebody who I'm not going to the Grand Canyon with, Devin Booker. He'd be shoving everybody over the edge. Gone.
Or Michael Irvin just blocking out everybody.
Yeah. That was funny because I was talking to my coworker about that series, and the first analogy I made was of Devin Booker and Michael Irvin. So it's funny that you brought that up.
No, I brought it up because you just brought it up earlier in the show. I hadn't thought about it before you brought it up.
Yeah, no, that's what he was doing. Like, I forgot I'd even done it on the show. It's been so long. It was an hour and a half ago. I hadn't seen anybody doing that since pretty much Michael Irvin's running down the field, just shoving dudes out of the way so he can make his play. Nobody. And the best part was though when Irvin did it that they called the DPI.
Right. The cornerback put his face interfered with Michael Irvin's hand.
Not only did Irvin just shove dudes straight up out of the way, he got the call.
Yeah. Interference on the cornerback. And the cornerback's looking up like, "What? Do you see me on the ground over here? What do you mean I interfered?"
I know they overcall the offensive pass interference a little bit now, but good. That's all I'm going to say. Good.
No, I agree. They call it where they used to never call it. So yes,
right. They got decades of makeup calls yet.
And it's people like Michael Irvin that they have to start calling it because of guys like that. That's exactly right. So what else sports-wise have we not gotten to here in July?
Man, baseball's been, you just had the All-Star break. I watched zero All-Star break stuff.
Same here.
Zero. You know, I didn't watch the Home Run Derby, didn't care.
Nope.
Didn't watch the Futures game, didn't care, and didn't watch the actual All-Star game. I think I did check the score on my phone. I don't think, does that count?
No, you didn't watch the game. You just checked the score.
I did not. Just pulled out my score app and was like, oh, okay. That happened. That was about it for me. That was my whole interaction with All-Star Weekend or whatever they want to call it now. But didn't watch any of it and didn't honestly care. The All-Star game was a big deal when we were kids. It's not a big deal anymore.
Not at all. Not to me.
Because, again, the All-Star game when we're kids, that was your only chance to watch some of these players or know who these guys were. That was it. Now it doesn't. Now you can watch anybody, anytime, anywhere. So the exposure to these players it's overexposure. So what's the whole point?
They tried to make it a bigger deal this year with the Ohtani stuff, right? That he's going to start the game as a pitcher, and then he's going to also be batting. Look, I'm the biggest Ohtani fan in the world, so if anyone was going to be excited about that, it would be me. But the reason I wasn't excited is because it doesn't count. It's an All-Star game. It doesn't matter. Like, he's going to pitch an inning and then bat, okay. And in the actual regular season, when the stuff counts, he pitches six or seven innings and also is batting three or four times and hitting home runs. That is actually interesting. Not only because he's playing the whole game, but because it counts for something. This is the opposite of that. It doesn't count for anything. And also, he's not going to play all that long. I figured he's only going to pitch one inning, and that's what he did. So, no, I didn't watch the All-Star game. The other thing about the All-Star game that would always interest me is I would just get so geeked up for the introductions, because the individual moment to see these players that usually don't get any shine – get to take their hats and doff them and get acknowledged by the crowd. I was always into that. I skipped that this year for one specific reason, and maybe you can tell me this makes me weird, although the answer is always that
it's okay.
I'm weird.
Yeah, I expect weirdness, so.
Okay, good. They answer with me, the whatever the question is, the answer is always Andre's weird. That's the correct answer to that. No, but this is what the reason I didn't want to watch the introduction this year is because I knew that like all four of the Houston Astros had already backed out of the All-Star game. And I just it made me uncomfortable to even think about hearing those names get announced. I didn't know if they were going to be there and take their acknowledgement, or if they weren't even going to be there, if they're going to. But if they were named on the team and then pulled out or whatever, I think they would still have to announce them like elected to the game but unable to play due to injury or whatever. So I figured their names would still be announced. I just didn't want to hear whatever the reaction to the Houston names are, because there's still that Astros hate going around about the cheating and the garbage cans. I saw some of that this weekend. The Astros are playing the White Sox at Comiskey Park, and I was watching that series all weekend, and they were giving them the business. They were really still jumping on the Astros, and there was an inflatable garbage can that hit the field at one point. They blew the hell out of Altuve all weekend. They're still getting it. They deserve everything. They deserve
take
everything
it.
That happened.
You got and they didn't take away your championship, but you got to take the heat.
They didn't take the heat. They backed all the way out of the – every single Astro backed out of the All-Star game and said, we're not even going to show up there.
That's just a chump move.
And I didn't even want to hear their names get announced because I knew it was going to be a reaction and booing. I didn't want to put up with that. I found myself over the last several years more sensitive to situations that I know – it's going to be a lot of hateful reaction from fans and a lot of booing and a lot of like in wrestling. I don't watch the introductions to title matches. That's another weirdness, I guess, but cause I know people are going to get booed who are, they're just doing their job. They're good workers or whatever. I don't like to hear people's reactions to other people anymore. I don't know what that is exactly. Maybe somebody can figure that out for me.
Right. Enough of the hate.
I don't want to deal with it.
There's a section of the population who exist for one reason only, and that is to just suck all the joy out of life.
Just boo everybody and everything.
Yeah. So I don't think that that's weird.
Okay.
I respect it.
Okay.
Not the reason that I would have come up with, but I can respect your choice.
I feel much better if somebody at least understands a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't feel like putting up with it anymore.
Yeah. So if you had, I don't know how you were with the betting odds, but I think you would have had a long favorite and made some money if you had Nationals Park as the first stadium to have a drive-by outside of it.
That's
because the fact that hasn't happened yet at like Comiskey or Oakland Coliseum. You know, I mean, there's a list of places I would have expected that to happen before Nationals Park.
It hasn't been reported. Let's just put it that way. I'm sure there's been plenty of shootings outside of those places. Somebody got shot that was at the game.
What?
Yeah, one of the people that got hit was a woman that was in the game, but she was standing outside the stadium.
She got hit by a stray.
Yeah, she got.
Because I heard it was a drive-by.
Yeah, it was two guys, two parties in cars shooting at each other, yes.
Well, that's just, what a hell of a way to spend a night.
It's a Saturday night. Saturday night's all right for fighting.
I'm sure they were not listening to Elton John.
Who knows?
Saturday. Yeah, I don't think they had that going on in the car while they were all, unloading.
These days,
at each other, hitting innocent bystanders.
Yeah, got players hitting the ground, got kids in the stadium hitting the ground.
You got
people.
Tatis and Machado letting people into the Padres dugout so they can get them out through the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. People in the suites hitting the deck and hiding behind tables like it's a shootout at the OK Corral. That's not normal. This is not supposed to be happening. But there you have it. But that just plays into what I've been hashtagging the Summer of Guns, because there seems to be now with everybody coming out in America and after the COVID, it just seems like there's more.
A lot of pent-up anger people got.
Oh my God!
Out.
Everywhere you turn,
the car and go shoot people.
It's a mass shooting every single day, it feels like.
Yeah.
There was a maid happened to come across a hotel room that was overlooking the baseball stadium out there in Denver before the All-Star game, and
yeah.
just happened to see a bunch of guns and was able
oh.
to report it and call that in and get the guys arrested before who God knows what was going to happen there. They were, I guess, they were talking about doing a Vegas-style shooting, like what happened out there. Like they wanted to really cause some mass terror on a national, worldwide scale. And it's like, I know there's always been guns. I know there's always been anger. I know there's always been, but it just feels like more and more and more of it. And it's scary and it's infuriating because it doesn't have to be like this. Like no other nation has to go through this bullshit. But here we are, and it's, I don't know where it's going to stop. It just seems to escalate more and more and more. And with this pandemic, it's so strange how everything shut down last year, including shooting, including, you know, everything, because everyone had to quarantine and whatnot. But you get over it and you get the vaccine or whatever, and you get more people out and society opens back up again. And it's supposed to be a good thing. It's supposed
yeah,
to be a
how
good
do we
time.
Celebrate? We shoot each
Let's
other.
Have mass shootings everywhere. Ugh. So it's kind of disgusting when you think about it. But I don't know what to do about it exactly. The only thing I know is, you know, be somewhere other than here is basically my only solution that
I've been
think of.
I've been avoiding the urban centers.
Yeah.
I don't find myself, and not even just urban centers. I'm not talking about, like, you know, deep, like, inner city. I'm just talking, like, general civilization, you know. You just don't know. It's like you're always on alert.
No, that's it. Unfortunately, it's people. It's not about urban or suburban or what.
Yeah.
It's just people. The more people you're around, the more likely you're going to be,
right. well,
to be surrounded by some weirdo.
More concentrated areas seem to have more mass violence because there's more targets.
Hmm.
You know, somebody who pulls out a gun and starts spraying in a cornfield isn't going to hit too many people. But if you pull out
right.
a gun in a mall, right, where there's a lot of people, you're going to hit some people. But this shooting was obviously, I don't know what the beef was, but hey,
That's
your safe. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it. If it was maybe a fight in order of a parking place, was it gang related? I have no idea.
I don't know either. But that's the one thing I did read was that somebody that was hit was a young lady that was actually at the game, but was
wow.
happened to be outside the stadium.
Man, this is why you should always stay for the whole game. You can get
don't
shot.
Leave early.
Don't leave the game early. You might get shot. That should be the new PA announcement before the game. We would like to remind all the fans in attendance today that you should stay all the way through the end of the game or you might die.
The new Rob Manfred slogan for baseball. Come for the baseball, stay so you don't get shot. I tell you.
Life without baseball is the afterlife. He come out with some good slogans for this one.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, no, I ended up reading through all the stuff on Twitter last night about the shooting, and all of a sudden it gets down, you know, what somebody posts like, you know, yeah, just go 8 blocks away from Nationals Park. It's that all the time. I was like, well, okay. You must know if you're there.
It doesn't make me want to go to Nationals Park, I'll tell you that.
I'm not in a hurry.
Yeah.
Not in a hurry. I mean, it wasn't before, and I'm definitely not now.
You know, I haven't been over there to keep calling it Comiskey because we're old.
I call it Comiskey still. I don't call
the hell
it
is
guaranteed
it now?
Great field.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going
to
go to the USO,
but
that's
to get
the
used
old
to
one.
Calling it to sell.
Right.
But it's Comiskey.
So it's Comiskey. I haven't been there in several years, but I guess they're trying to clean that area up a little bit. They're trying to get more businesses, more you know, where you can actually hang out there after the game.
I was gonna say they're trying to kind of Wrigleyville it,
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing at all. That's understandable, because why would you want what Comiskey has been for 70, 80 years, which is a place that nobody wants to be anywhere near after the game is over, because there's nothing around it.
Yeah.
So they should be trying to attract
projects literally across the highway for all those years.
But even before the projects came along, there was nothing around there. After the projects got torn down, there's nothing around there. Famously, a sports talk show host in Chicago got stabbed after leaving a White Sox game because there's nothing around there. So if you're walking around the neighborhoods and I don't want to be accused of being reverse racist, but if you're walking around there and you look like you don't really belong around there, and you wind up attracting, some attention that you don't want, and the guy wound up being, I figured if he was shot or stabbed or beat up, but something really bad happened to him after a game. And I understand how something bad could happen to him, because even as a black person, I don't want to be around Comiskey Park after the game's over, because there's nothing around there. I'm with everybody else.
I was only there once ever.
Yeah.
I only went down there one time ever. It was that first crosstown Cubs Sox game that counted. That's the only time I ever went to Comiskey. It was the new one. And I only went there that one time, got some cheap tickets, sat in the nosebleeds. And I was sitting in the seats that don't exist anymore. I was so high up.
Yeah, the 36th rows, 23 through 36, which they had to cut out because they were so high.
I was in 36. I was all the way at the top of the field, looking straight down at the right field foul pole.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like if I got a running start and jumped, I would have shish kebobbed myself right on the foul pole. I was so high up. But, yeah, I mean.
Well, and you always talk about the other site that you can see from up there as well, which is
We were counting out the burned out windows on the Robert Taylor homes. Yeah.
Right. So,
because the game wasn't very exciting. I want to say I was a 7-2 Cubs loser. I did get to see Rhino homer, but that was right towards the end for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of cool seeing Ryan Sandberg, homer, which I'd seen plenty of times, but it's the first time I ever went to a Cubs road game.
Mm-hmm.
The only other time I've been to Milwaukee, I was never at County. I never saw them play at County Stadium. I was only at County Stadium once, and it was for the last football game that the Packers ever played there. Because the Packers used to play two games a year at County Stadium in Milwaukee. And I was at that last game that the Packers played there. So, yeah, but I've seen the Cubs play in the Metrodome, though, too.
Ah.
Before, this predates Target Field and whatever the other place is, something. We don't need to get into this about how we just, like, there's no charm in the knowing the names of the stadiums anymore, because there just isn't. But I
random business stadium.
Yeah, rando name, insert your name here, stadium. With all the commercialization of this changing hands every few years now, so the stadium names are virtually meaningless.
I can't imagine being a young kid and trying to keep up with all the stadium names now, because they change every 3 or 4 years. Some of them, that football stadium in Miami had 15 names, didn't it? Because they just kept changing ownership.
But we still just call it Joe Robbie Stadium.
Right. Even though it was Hard Rock, and then it was something else, and I don't know how anyone would want to keep up with the names of. Yeah, just go back to the old. The Cleveland Stadium was just Municipal Stadium. The
right
Oakland Stadium was just Oakland Alameda County
Oakland
Stadium,
Coliseum.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Riverfront Stadium or Three Rivers, just something that actually indicates the location of where it's at. Veterans Stadium in Philly, the good old
Those were all the cookie cutter stadiums, though.
They were, but the names were actually meaningful and memorable.
Right. Yeah. Now,
as opposed to rando business name stadiums.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you where the Reds play now. I mean, it's not the Great American Ballpark anymore, is it?
I don't know. Is it?
You tell me.
That's what I thought it was.
Know.
Has it changed? I don't know.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I'm sure it has. If it hasn't, I'd be shocked. But hey, Nationals Park, it's got a good name to it. It's also a great place for a shooting.
Somebody will buy the rights to that eventually. I'm sure that's only temporary.
Yeah.
No, I was just kind of chuckling at the one White Sox game that you've ever been to. The one time at Kaminsky Park, you not only haven't only been there but once, but the game that you chose was a Cubs-Sox game. So you basically went there at the highest possible incident of violence that you were. Because Cubs-Sox games, the 10 or so that I've been to, there's always a fight. At least one fight.
You didn't have the same exposure to Cubs-Cardinals that I did. I thought Cubs-Cardinals were more testy than Cubs-Sox.
Really?
The Sox fans were always – they always kind of had the big brother, little brother thing going on. Like, they always were just trying to, like – it was like they were there to fight for respect, right? Because they were never – they were always the second team. Like, they would draw 1,000 people, but then the Cubs would come down there. It's a sellout, right? Just like when the Cubs go to Milwaukee. It seemed very one-sided, the antagonism seemed very one-sided. With the Cardinals, that was pure hatred both ways.
Okay, yeah, I've never been to a Cubs-Cardinals game, or maybe one.
Well, you weren't at the one where I just turned around and saluted all the Cardinals fans, were you? We came back in the ninth inning after they'd been razzing us the whole game in our section, and we ended up winning the game in the bottom of the ninth inning. And yeah, they got the salute. Double
told
barrel.
Them, told them they're number one.
Oh, I told them twice. those were wild. That Yankees series we went to was pretty wild.
Yeah, obviously I can speak to that.
Write that shit down.
Yeah.
But you're in a Sox hat too, which is even funnier than I thought you were wearing you were wearing Yankees stuff, weren't you?
I was wearing a Yankees cap. I was the anti Cub asshole back then.
We won that game. The Cubs won that game.
Yeah.
That was whatever. Andy Pettit.
And the Cubs are playing against
Pettit.
Your favorite.
But I remember we ended up winning that game because I think Joe Borowski picked the guy off first for the final out. Yeah.
Yep, a pinch runner.
Yeah. Which was even because the Yankees were coming back. Cubs were way up in that game, and the Yankees came all the way back, got a guy on first. They're like winning runs at the plate, and they picked them. They picked off the runner at first to walk off, which was pretty cool. But
and so that's why I can attest to how crazy that Yankee series was, because when that happened and the Cubs won the game, crazy way, the guy that had been heckling me the whole game slapped me so hard on the back that I almost turned around and did something. He like really wound up in it. Yeah, how about that? And then slapped me like really hard. So
yeah, I have good memories going to those games. But yeah,
that series was a very special circumstance. So that was the first time the Yankees had been to Wrigley Field literally
ever
in 70 years.
Since those World Series games, but that was the first regular season
game or series they
had ever played.
Yep. And that was a Sunday night game. It was ESPN. They had been sauced all day. They had all, sauced all weekend, really. And they had their chance to get ready to get riled up for that game, and they were ready. They were riled up.
I remember calling you up because I had the extra for that game.
Yep.
And you lived right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty easy.
Walked right over there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the thought that the Cubs-Cardinals series were – maybe more violent or crazier than the Cubs.
I don't know about violent, but definitely tense. And just there's that rivalry there with Cubs and Cardinals that does not exist with Cubs and White Sox or Cubs and Brewers. It's what the Brewer fans don't get, because I think the Cubs are their big like arch enemy, and like the Cub fans are kind of like, it's the Brewers. It's very one sided, the hatred. I don't hate the Brewers.
Well, it's not like that rivalry existed for that long.
That's
the Brewers were in the American League.
That rivalry's barely been going on for half my life. I did not grow up hating the Brewers. I didn't even care about them.
Right.
They were in the other league. But it was the Cardinals and the Mets and the Padres. You grew up hating those teams.
Yeah, I can't speak to the mindset of Cubs or Sox fans for the Cubs-Sox games. All I know is, and I went to Cubs-Sox games in Wrigley and in Comiskey. I didn't just go in Comiskey. But every game I went to, there was a fist fight, at least one. Every single one.
Couple of drunks just, having at it, huh?
Yeah. And, seventh, eighth inning, ninth inning. It was always later on after they'd had a few.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was in the upper deck above me, and sometimes it was down there where I was sitting, and sometimes it was across the stadium, on the other side. But there's always at least one fist fight during the Cubs-Sox game, always. So I can't speak to the Cubs-Cardinals, but I haven't been to many of those games.
Oh, man. It's just the kind of stuff like you're talking about with all the negativity. It's like, that's the kind of stuff I just don't need. I don't need to get so amped up for a sporting event that I feel the need to punch somebody else because they root for the other team.
Yeah, I don't have any need to interact with the fans of the other team at all, at all.
Right.
Like,
now,
why?
I could if it was like you're having a conversation and and it's civilized and you're actually talking to somebody and they're just a passionate fan of their team and you're a fan of your team and you can actually talk about the sports and the things going on intelligently. But when it just turns into, man, you guys suck, your team shit. Come on. We beat you guys 12 years ago.
Many intelligent conversations have you had at a game with fans from the other team? I don't think I've ever had that.
Very, very few. I mean, my wife and I would go to games, and I'd be wearing my Cubs stuff and she'd be wearing her Brewers stuff, but we'd always be going to the games at the Brewers Stadium. But yeah, I can converse with some people we would be talking to the people around us, and they were generally fairly civil, but I was also completely outnumbered in that little area that we were in. There'd be a little handful of Cub fans, and then there'd be, the Brewer fans around us. But yeah, I it could happen.
Okay.
When I was going to the Cubs games and I had my season tickets, never.
Right.
Never happened.
And I hardly see fans, at Sox games anyway, all the Sox games I was going to, there's hardly any fans at all because it's the Sox.
True.
Hardly any people there
plenty,
at all.
Plenty of good seats available.
Oh, yeah. Plenty. The one time I went to a Sox-Yankees game, and every time Derek Jeter came up to bat, there were these four girls right behind me.
Oh, boy.
Couldn't have been more than 17, 18 years
old. They flashed
every time. No, they would. Well, I wasn't looking at them, so maybe they were. I don't know. But when his name would get announced, they would, at the same time, every single at-bat that he had, they would squeal and go, Derek Jeter, with that New York accent. So you knew, they were from New York, obviously, in town to root for their guy, Jeter. That was the most annoying. Some things will stay in your head for it. I'm going to be on my deathbed and I'm going to be hallucinating about so many different things. And one of the things that's going to flash through my mind is Derek Jeter. I'm going to hear that in my dreams. Cause I can't forget it. Cause it's been, how many years ago was that? It was 25 years ago. It's a long time ago. So yeah, the other fans of teams, at Comiskey Park, there weren't that many, and the ones that were there were just, doing their own thing and being annoying, and no, I wouldn't have interacted with them at all for any reason.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
But that's me.
Yeah, that sounds like you. You'd be sitting there with your hat and your scorecard just watching the game.
Exactly. I was just about to describe the fact that I'm, a lone wolf anyway, so I'd be there with my headphones and my hat and keeping score and not really interacting with anybody to begin with.
Yeah.
Whereas you and your wife are there and you're a lot more social and a lot more apt to talk to other people. So I understand that.
And you'd have that, don't fuck with me look on your face.
That's my look. That's just my face. I keep telling everybody that. Everyone thinks I'm this badass that wants to fight everybody.
No, but you got that concentrated look,
Again, that's just my face. I'm not. So when you think I'm concentrating on something, I'm probably zoned out and playing a Prince song in my head and not thinking about anything.
Well, that works too. That means you're concentrating on that. You got some Purple Rain going on or something. I don't know.
No, everybody looks at me and thinks that I'm this badass and wants to kill everybody and beat her. I haven't been in a fight since second grade. I think I've said that on the show before. I'm not mean. I don't fight. I don't have any, I just have a bitch face, basically. I just have,
my face looks like I'm pissed at everybody.
Yeah. That's just my face. It's not a concentrated face. I'm saying that's just my face. That's all it is. So was there anything else sports-wise we wanted to get to before we get out of here?
No, I think that we somehow – well, we always do. I mean, we do this show every day and somehow fill up 2 hours. But
always. The one thing I wanted to point out was there's a WWE pay-per-view tonight in Fort Worth, Texas.
Ooh, was it Money in the Bank?
It was.
I saw that on Twitter. That's the only way I knew.
Oh, okay. I turned it off.
Like I'm not like a closet fan or anything, like secretly.
No, we know. Like you're the guy that doesn't pay attention, but you know everything that's going on because that's how simple it is. We're well aware of that. Yeah.
Soap opera.
So this show is in front of people. They came back last Monday. For Raw or... Well, they've come back in front of people recently. It's been in the past week or so. And all those shows before that were in the dome with the video screens and whatnot. And I remember saying this on the WrestleMania preview show, that when they do bring people back in, WWE will not be able to resist continuing to sweeten the noise and continuing to have the fans' reaction the way they want and not the way the fans actually want to react, because WWE, more than any other wrestling league, cannot stand their fans having their own reaction to things. They want to book things the way they want to book them. They don't care what the fans think. And boy, was I right about that. The piped-in crowd noise, it's just like I figured it would be. We got the initials that I really need to incorporate and make a part of the show or something. The IBIHTO, which means I believe I had that one. I knew they were going to pipe in the crowd noise. I knew they couldn't resist. And anyone who watches and listens to some of the reactions on the shows for some of these wrestlers, if you don't think they're piping in the noise and sweetening this shit, you don't understand at all. You don't know what you're watching, because there's no way some of these reactions to some of these wrestlers were as loud as it turned, as you would think that it was while watching the show. I think it was SmackDown Friday night was the first SmackDown that was live in front of people since the pandemic. So Vince McMahon decided to walk out and start that show, which I knew was going to happen. He has to take credit for everything. And the loudness when he walked out, you would have thought that was Jesus Christ who came down and resurrected right in front of those people the way they read. I'm like, there's no fucking way in hell they were cheering that loud for Vince McMahon's music when he came out. No chance. No chance.
No chance in hell.
Yes. And you picked up on that because, again, you're not a fan, but you know all the...
But I know.
You know the songs and the catchphrases and everything that goes with it. But you're not actually a fan. You're not actually watching. But they're still sweetening that shit, and I knew they would. They can't resist. There's no way they could resist that. That's about all I had, unless you had anything else. I think we're
I'm going dark next week because I'm on vacation the whole week, so I won't be back. I'll be gone pretty much the 25th through the 1st, which should run us right up to what would be Hall of Fame weekend.
Yeah, I'll definitely be contacting you and figuring out the exact dates, but for those of you listening that already know, Hall of Infamy is going to be around the same vicinity of that corresponding sports Hall of Fame weekends. Whatever weekend baseball is doing their Hall of Fame inductions, yep, we'll have our Hall of Infamy inductions. I'm handling baseball this year.
Through the 9th, so that is Hall of Fame weekend for football.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Hall of Fame induction itself is August 8th.
Okay.
Which would be, I believe, a Saturday. Nope, right. Sunday. So that would probably be the night we'll do our show. My guess would be that Sunday night, the 8th. I don't know about baseball, because don't we usually do the baseball show first?
Yeah, because they're Hall of Fame usually first. They're Hall of Fame weekend.
of Fame 2021. Okay, let's just...
We're both Googling the same thing at the same time.
Okay, so baseball...
July 24th?
Oh, it's July 24th. You're doing baseball this year?
I sure am. Wow.
I will be around if you want to sneak that in Saturday night.
So when are you off the grid?
I leave for vacation the morning of the 25th.
And I won't be back
until the 31st. So I'm gone that whole week. So if you wanted to sneak that in on Saturday night, I could sneak that in.
This coming Saturday. Yeah, I can do that. I can certainly write it up and then have it ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. I'm looking at my list. I actually have more on my baseball list than I have on my football list. But that's probably also because we just started doing baseball.
Exactly.
Where with football, we're like plumbing the depths of things. It always gives us stuff, though. It is the gift that keeps on giving because we don't have any five-year rule.
Right.
But I'm down to just needing one more for football, so I know I'll pick that up in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, football, I've still got a list of like 10 or 15 guys if I want to go dark that I still haven't covered yet, believe it or not.
Well, the issue I run into with football is I find myself needing to cross-reference the list to make sure I'm not doubling up. Because it's going to happen eventually. One of us is going to double up on something. It's going to...
Oh, that's why I pulled up the master list to try to keep that from happening. We got a master list now.
That's right.
Refer to that and make sure that.
And then that's just going to be, I'm assuming the master list just gets continuously edited?
Yeah. Yeah, I got no reason to do anything different. So, yeah, just go back every year that we do the inductions and then add on.
Yeah.
That's why it's the master list.
But I've got four. I've got four good ones. I mean, they're all good, right? I mean, we don't have any bad ones.
Right. I mean, we're not...
Shows, and it's not always dark. That's the one thing I do. Should always
point out.
For
me,
the show
it is
not just
who I am.
But it's not always like death and murder
dark,
and
right.
rape.
No.
You know, as I say that, we have Darren Sharper and, you know, but...
Hey, Dark Side of Baseball, Dark Side of Football. Vice Network is ripping us off because they're doing Dark Side of Everything, and we were the ones that were first.
We inspired them, but we've also put in some funnier things too. I mean, they're not all, you know.
By the way, speaking of Vice, real quick, they added on to their dark family. They started a third show called, and all, you know, again, right up our alley, Dark Side of the 90s. And their first show was about talk shows. So Springer.
Right. So we're
and
getting
Maury.
Like, Jenny Jones.
Yes,
and Martin Downey
exactly.
Jr.
They didn't even go to Morton Downey. They basically, yeah, I know. How
cannot,
do you talk
no,
about?
You cannot have. I'm calling bullshit on that show right now. You cannot have a show about the dark side of talk, like these '90s talk shows, and not have unless that was '80s.
It started in the '80s, but
okay.
But I actually agree with you that to ignore Morton
That's
Downey
like,
as if he had no. Influence at all on is definitely
that was sort
oversight.
Of like the genesis of all of your Jerry Springers and Geraldos and Sally Jesse Raphaels and Jenny Joseph. That right?
They talk about everything as a genesis, sort of leading up and eating on each other, but they ignore the whole Morton Downey part of it,
which was
definitely a gross oversight.
I mean, I remember watching that show.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it was. You knew it was over the top. You knew it was fake.
But if you're going to talk about Geraldo and getting his nose busted by the Nazis.
Yeah, the skinheads, yeah.
As part of the ginning up of the hatred and inflamed passions, but you're going to ignore Morton Downey Jr., then you definitely did not do it right. I enjoyed the show, but I always did think something was – missing and wasn't telling really the whole story. They were focusing more on Springer and the guy that killed the other guy on the Jenny Jones show.
Right.
And that's
oh,
you
that
know,
was
spectacular.
The guy who came out as gay with the secret crush thing.
Exactly. And
then just gets murdered.
Right. Then the guy killed him 4 years later. And I understand focusing on that because it's, you know, sensationalism, but you really, it was an hour show. So I guess they had to cut some stuff out and they had to ignore some other angles. but they completely did not mention Morton Downey Jr. once. And that I knew something was missing even when I was watching it, and you came right out and said, oh, Morton Downey Jr. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a pretty big part of talk.
Then you're like, that's what was missing.
I knew something was missing, and that was exactly what was missing, because Morton Downey Jr. is a huge part of talk shows and why they sort of devolved. What they were focusing on was more on Phil Donahue and how Jerry Springer came out and wanted to be the next Phil Donahue.
Yeah, because at the beginning, the Springer show was pretty legit.
Exactly.
At the beginning,
it was tame.
It turned into a circus. Yeah, it was very tame.
Exactly right. And so if you're still interested, it is not a complete story because Morton Downey Jr. is missing as well as some other people probably. But if you do want to check out the show, they do talk about Springer being legit when he first came out, and they
yep.
basically tell the story of why they went dark the way that they did, which is basically because they were getting canceled and didn't care, and then they went dark.
It has something to do about the money.
It's always about the money. Basically they were getting canceled, and the producer said, you know what, we're getting canceled anyway. Let's go out and let's have fun instead of doing what we're trying to do. And then the ratings went up, and they say, wait a minute. I think we're onto something here. Then that's basically how that happened. Dark side of the 90s after Dark Side of the Ring and Dark Side of Football. So Vice Network is doing dark everything. And their shows are basically really good and well-produced, but, yeah, it's maybe a little short on some detail.
Yeah, and there's going to be, especially for people who lived through it, right? If you're 25 and you don't have the same perspective as somebody who lived through it, this is all new to you, right? Or news to you.
Sure.
You know, so I get, you know, I don't know what their programming niche is, you know, what they're aiming for, like demographically. But obviously, if you're in your mid-40s and you grew up through the 90s, you know, I mean, those were my teenage years. So that's right in the wheelhouse for watching that stuff. Yeah, I could expect for people who lived through it and remember things in detail that it's good info, but it's not telling the whole story, and you're not going to get that in 44 minutes.
Yeah, I think that probably is the reason why stuff like that would be missing, is just the hour long content of the show is you can't fit everything in.
And that's a topic too that's pretty ripe for dark side stuff. So
definitely.
That could have probably been like a two-parter.
That could be a miniseries. 90s talk shows? Shit. That you could do 8 shows on that alone.
But
really.
Springer was the granddaddy. I mean, in that era, that was the big one, right? That was...
Oh, yeah.
That was the one that took everything to the next level. We don't have anything like that now.
No, the taste for that, I think, kind of spun off. They point to is all these reality shows that we don't watch, but there's a very similar thread with those about, you know, you got the women pulling hair, you got the sort of trailer trash or the street trash, or screaming at each other,
desperate housewives of whatever. And,
right. So there's a very similar thread when you talk about looking at people doing this on your TV screen and going, oh God, look at this trash. At least I'm not, whatever those people are.
Basically, the only function that those shows had was to make you feel better about yourself, because you could, point at them and laugh and go, wow,
exactly.
I'm not that guy.
So they point that out as a very similar strain, as basically the evolution, if you will, of what Springer was.
Yeah.
And so for that, I definitely have to give them a thumbs up. We're going to give them thumbs down for not being as detailed as they could be and completely omitting somebody like Morton Downey Jr. But you do have to turn and give him a thumbs up for, pointing that arrow and saying, from the trash that you saw on Springer, here now we have Real Housewives of Atlantic City or something. And it's basically the same thing, which is, look at these losers, at least I'm not like them. So there is that. All right.
I'll give them a pass, because the Morton Downey Jr. show, just so we know, it ran from 87 to 89.
Ah, so it never did make it to the 90s.
So it didn't make it into the 90s. So we can give them a pass, but to not even get a passing mention.
They didn't even mention it at all. So, but yeah, I'm not aware that it didn't get to the 90s at all. So that is good on you for doing the research.
Yeah, well, it was called. I did a quick Google search.
That's what research is now. When we were kids, research was, where's the encyclopedia? We don't have to do that anymore. Times have changed.
I do like this Washington Post has an article, because I was looking it up, and it's an article from 2015 that basically the title of it says, "Why We're All Just Living in Morton Downey Jr.'s Talk Show Now."
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I'll have to go pull some clips of that on YouTube. I bet you those are out there.
Oh man, I'm sure they are. And he's got his own documentary out there. I watched that years ago, so it's not like he doesn't know that. Oh, there is definitely a documentary about him, and he was even more of a thing than we knew. Let's just put it that way.
Piece of trash.
Piece of work, like piece of everything. Like he wanted to be a singer. That's just one of the small things about him. Like he's actually trying to be an entertainer. Like he wanted to do it all. So
man.
And stopped at nothing to try to get there.
All right. I'm calling it a night.
All right. We're into the after show. We don't have any theme music again. We're the kings of non sequitur. We go as long as we want to go, and even longer sometimes. So yeah, we have decided our next show, and it's going to be in less than a week, this coming Saturday night, July the 24th. Get ready. The IMLD Baseball Hall of Infamy inductions. Induction season is upon us, and we are going to get it on this coming Saturday. I will have your baseball inductions for you, and I'm looking forward to writing that up this week, and we'll be here 9 o'clock. Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern, out there for our buddy Lou in New Jersey, coming up on this coming Saturday. So get ready, and we'll be back here for that. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you all for listening, and come back and join us Saturday night.